So welcome everybody. My name is Stephen Downs and this is the first part of a workshop entitled, and I have to scroll down to it to get the title, How to Organize a Massive Open Online Course, Technology, Methods, Infrastructure, and Theory, with simultaneous translation. And I've learned from experience, always be nice to the translators. Otherwise they start reading the newspaper. And so what you see here on the screen is the audio recording of this. And this is something I do with all of my talks, all of my workshops, everything I do. And this, I guess, is the first lesson in this workshop. Record everything you do. And so I'm doing an audio recording. It's a program called Audacity. It's free, open source, and as you can see, it runs on Macintosh as well as on Windows. All right. Thank you. This will allow me to... Hola?
Hello?
I am here. Now we're connected. Now, that's connectivism, she says. So now we're having a secret conversation. We're talking about all of you. Okay. I'll just take it out for now, but I will put it back in when I need it. So I'm recording this on Audacity. How many of you have seen Audacity before? Lots. Excellent. I'm trying to get a sense of who you are and how much you know, because they didn't tell me a whole lot. Here's an interesting question. Before this workshop, how many of you had ever heard of me or of connectivism or anything like that? How many of you were familiar with this work? So, 3, 4, 5. So, for the rest of you, this will be a new topic. Were any of you at the talk that I gave yesterday? I know some of you may have been. No? Oh, yeah, okay, about a quarter, a third. Okay, so this will all be the same content, so you can... No, I'm just kidding. All right, the second thing I'm going to do now is start my radio broadcast. Normally, when I give a talk, I do this all sort of behind the scenes, so I don't make a big deal of it. But because we're doing this workshop here, I want you to see what I'm doing as I do it. So, because I'm working on the Macintosh computer, I'm using something called Nicecast. Well, let me back up. And I'll show you my radio station. Here is my radio station. It is called Ed Radio. And here is the player. Let's see what's on this radio station right now. Nothing. Don't say nothing. I'm sort of testing the bandwidth too, so. And it should be playing. Maybe it really is nothing. Let's try something else, because that's not working. Uh-oh, here we go. Proxy transparent, not specified. So this is the classic thing when system administrators say everything is open. What they mean always is everything we think you are going to need is open. Let's try real player and see if that works. No. Oh boy. That's not a good sign. So what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to play my radio station. Here we go.
A collaborative offering of
you can't really hear it.
Instructional kind of content. That's really my PhD.
I don't think that really works.
And,
okay.
If you have the answer, then let's go.
So that's my radio station, and it's playing programs about education and educational technology. But what I'm going to do for this session is I'm going to broadcast live on that radio station. So, I'm going to start up Nicecast. So, here's the setup for it. And I'll talk more about this setup in the second session tomorrow. And so, I've got my microphone set up. I'll start broadcast. And, whoops. So, I have this. There we go. Okay, now we're broadcasting on Ed Radio, and we should be able to be heard by people around the world. Now, I don't know how many people are listening, but let's come back here. I'll reload this page. For Ed Radio, I use a site called My Auto DJ. And they host a radio server for me. So what happens is I capture the audio here. I'm capturing it off of this microphone, hopefully without too much echo. When you have a microphone like this with speakers, wherever they are, and you have another microphone, sometimes you get an echo effect. And see, the audio guys in the front are nodding because they've done it before. So I hope I'm not echoing too much. If I am, those of you on Ed Radio, I'm sorry. So let's see. So here's where people are listening to us on Ed Radio. We've got someone in the United States. Oops. There we go. We'll come back to that. So for those of you who are on radio, I'm just showing the map of where you are listening. So it looks like just north of Philadelphia. Oh, New York City. Someone from New York City. And we have someone from very close to here, actually, I guess. And it's not me. Maybe you guys know where this is. Or maybe it is in Mexico City. Ciudad de Mexico, perhaps. And I also saw someone down in Brazil. Hi, Brazil. If that's Diego, hi, Diego. I bet you it is. Well, I could be wrong. There's lots of people in Brazil. Oh, no. Well, it's the center of Brazil. I doubt that they're in the middle of the rainforest, so I don't know where they are in Brazil. So that's what we've got right now. We've got three people on the radio station. That's typical, but it's kind of interesting. It's a whole different experience broadcasting to just a few people. But what happens is, because it's a live event, it adds a bit of a dynamic to it. And my photo has uploaded. Okay, well, that'll probably improve my bandwidth. So, okay, I'm trying to do a bunch of things here. Now, because this is a workshop, this is actually the beginning of the workshop now. I wanted to keep things very informal. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Oh, is this audio? Oh, I wonder what that will do. Okay. Now, that might work out all right, or it might produce horrible feedback. I'll keep this one handy just in case. Please don't say that was me. Okay, so we'll see how that goes. In theory, what should happen now is the audio I play on my computer should come out over the speakers. But if it comes out over the speakers, it's going to go back into the microphone, and it'll go back into the radio station, and the radio station will be picked up and come back out over the... So we'll see what happens. But right now that's not happening, so either it's not turned on or we're getting away with it. But it really shouldn't work. Anyhow, This is a very informal workshop. And is there a second microphone? I should have asked that before. A second microphone? Oh, good. Okay. Now, the human-operated theremin. No? Yeah.
Test.
No feedback. Very good. Okay, so I want to... Oh, hi. Yeah. Oh, no, it's okay. I'm sorry? Oh, I was just trying to produce feedback, that's all. It's okay. Like that, yeah. Oh, okay. Also, there's someone running the soundboard that's preventing me from doing feedback. Okay, what I want, the reason why I asked for the second microphone is I'd like to get a quick sense of who you are and what your background is. So maybe the nice woman with the microphone who's not listening to the translation. Okay, what? On, yes, please. Yeah.
Hi, Reg Valdez.
Yes, please. And just maybe not everybody, but a few people, tell me who you are and what work you do or what you're studying, what your background is, and a little bit about what you hope for from this workshop. We'll spend a little bit of time doing that, and then once I know who you are and what you expect from the workshop, then we'll talk about what the content will be. So we'll begin now.
Okay. My name is Monica Almeida.
No.
Okay. My name is Monica Almeida. Soy directora de este centro universitario y me gustaría hablarte un poco del equipo de trabajo que aquí se encuentra, que podría ayudar a que rápidamente. Soy directora de este centro universitario y me gustó.
I'm not getting anything now.
Canal 3.
She's not translating. No. Oh.
It's fine, I'm on slide 3. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bueno, soy recuerdo del centro universitario, bienvenido. Me gustaría usar para darte una fotografía muy rápida de muchos de los asistentes a este taller, ya que son académicos, investigadores, jefes de departamento, coordinan, desarrollan cursos en este centro universitario. Encuentran también coordinadores de carrera que se responsabilizan de la trayectoria de forma activa de los estudiantes y también están con nosotros el secretario académico de este centro, investigadores de la comité, profesores que también diseñan cursos en línea y la expectativa para el caso de todo el equipo de cubanos es aprender de las nuevas formas de abrir a las oportunidades a nuestros escolarizados, pero también a la comunidad no escolarizada de la región, casi 300.000 jóvenes que pudieran tener acceso a través del uso de la tecnología a nuestros cursos. Y pues también comprender que ayer, como lo dijo ayer, el MOD ya es prácticamente educación tradicional. Entonces, dejo esto para presentarles un rápido aprovechando algunos de los talleres.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Elizabeth de la Peña. Vengo representando a la Universidad Autónoma de Gran Internacionales. Es una universidad de corte agrícola y obviamente que estaba más con cursos en línea o a distancia, pues resulta interesante y tenemos las
And for people listening on Ned Radio in English, they're passing the microphone around in the audience, and I'm hearing the translation, and they're telling me about their background and experience.
Buenas tardes, yo soy Macarena Hernando, soy pedagoga por representando al Instituto Politécnico Nacional. Tengo la asignatura de Desarrollo e Innovación Curricular en la Dirección de Educación Superior, del IPN. He venido trabajando con la educación en línea desde que entré al Politécnico, más o menos 10 años. Entonces, quisiera aprender qué se está haciendo de este año.
Okay. And the microphone's moving around. Oh, there's a hand up at the front. And what I'm putting up on the screen right now.
Hola, buenas tardes. Mi nombre es María Alejandra de Sandoval. Soy estudiante del séptimo semestre de la licenciatura en educación. Y pues gracias por permitirnos estar aquí con usted.
Feed is really choppy, says Will Richardson. Yeah, I'm sorry, Will. I've stopped uploading photos.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Marcelina Montesquieu. Yo trabajo aquí en el centro universitario porque tengo la carrera de turismo y bueno, manejamos también cursos en línea y mi interés es aprender más. Gracias.
Okay. Anyone else? Algo más, I know, Regina. Okay, what I've done here now, because this is all part of the thing, right? It's a live online event. And this is very typical of what we do in a massive online course, is we communicate with people at a distance using Twitter. So I'm using a tag here, Ed Radio. It's called a hashtag. Because the first character is a hash mark. Sometimes called a pound sign. I don't know. Maybe I can make that bigger for you. So there it is, right? And I search in Twitter for this hashtag. #EdRadio. And when somebody wants to communicate with me, they use that tag. So this is Will Richardson here. And I suppose he's the one who was in New York. And I hope he's still listening. And he says the feed is really choppy. So you see, I'm using Twitter to do quality control. And I'll try moving the microphone closer. And pointing it at me. And maybe that'll make the feed better for Will Richardson and others. Now, to prepare for this workshop, again, I didn't really know what sort of setup to expect. And I had really hoped that you would all have computers and everybody would be online. But that's okay. But what I did is I created a site in Google Sites. How many of you are familiar with Google Sites? A few, 10%. So here's the homepage for Google Sites. Oh well, it's my homepage. Let me sign out here. And this is what it'll look like when you go there for the first time. Google can be slow. I love how it said, "Espera por favor," in Spanish, and then switched over to an English page. And what Google Sites is a way to create a website online for free. And what I like about it is I can share this with people and also distribute the task of editing. And so my great plan at the start, and it's still my plan, was to set up this site and have all of you help me in creating it and editing it. But you don't have your computers here. Does anybody have an iPad or anything? I see someone waving their smartphone. So you could follow along. So what I did is I set up this website, and it follows the structure of my talk from yesterday. And for those of you who did not hear my talk yesterday, let me explain what I did. I gave a history of the development of the MOOC. I told the story from the early websites to the first MOOC that we launched, to the MOOCs that have been created more recently. And as I told the story of each MOOC, I introduced an aspect of the theory of the massive open online course and talked about some practicalities. But it was a very short talk, even though I went a bit over time. And I wasn't able to cover any of this in nearly the detail I would have liked. But now we have lots of time together. So what the plan was, what the plan still is, but you'll have to do this at home or in your office, is to have you help me create this site. Because this is the origin or the beginning of the massive open online course. I took as my first example the Wiley Wiki. This is named after Dave Wiley or David Wiley. And this is David Wiley pictured here. How many of you have heard of David Wiley? Do you know David Wiley? Oh. I would like very much to recommend him and his work. He is very well known in the field for two major reasons. And the first reason is the work that he has done in learning objects. And he published a book. This was a number of years ago now. The Instructional Use of Learning Objects. This is a foundational work in the field. And David Wiley set an example by making this work open and accessible to all people. He published it using an open publication license. And as you can see from the date, it's from 1999. More recently, David Wiley is well known for promoting open education and open learning. This is his weblog here. I'm just waiting for it to open. And come on, David, give us your weblog. Here we go. It's called Iterating Toward Openness. And he is very well known today for promoting open content and open publishing. And there are different interpretations of what we mean by open content. And David Wiley and I have our disagreements. But fundamentally, the idea is based around the idea of open access. So people can freely retrieve these materials for themselves. Now I see a post has come up, or a tweet has come up on Ed Radio. And Veronica is saying, no connection for me. It's skipping a bit, but I'm still broadcasting. Yeah, I think broadcasting at 128 megabits per second was too ambitious. Here it is, the bit rate. The higher the bit rate, the more bandwidth I use. But it's a process to lower the bit rate. I have to contact the server administrator. But I think a more appropriate bit rate for this environment would be 32. But it's too late now. So I'm sorry, Veronica. I'm going to try again. We are broadcasting. See how I'm responding to her? And I'm using the hashtag. I don't know where Veronica is. Anyhow, back to David Wiley. So, and that was his blog, and I talked about his support for open education. So the first takeaway, the first thing you should take home from this workshop is a note to look up David Wiley. In 2007, David Wiley offered one of his courses online. And he created his course in a wiki. And what he did was, he opened the wiki not only to his own students, but to anybody else who wanted to participate worldwide. And so this became known as the Wiley Wiki. So let's see if we can't go to his course here. And no, that's not it. All right, we'll do it this way. I always have a backup source for your links. So now what I'm doing is, and there's no S. So this is his course. As you can see, it's in a wiki. How many of you are familiar with a wiki? Really? Are the rest of you not familiar with a wiki, or just not raising your hands? I always have to check. Because me, when I attend these presentations, I'm sitting in the back of the room, and I don't raise my hand for anything. Okay. Here's a wiki. And let me show you another wiki, a very famous wiki. It's called Wikipedia. Have you heard of Wikipedia? Yeah. So a wiki is just like Wikipedia, except it's in a different location. And I'll go into the Espanol version. And the important thing about a wiki is that anybody can edit. Maybe I should have used English so I'd know where it says. I'll use the English version. And let's see what this tweet is on Twitter. That's just me responding. Okay, good. So I'll go to an article here on Wikipedia. And here's a link that allows me to edit. And yes, I am really editing Wikipedia. And I can change the name of the battleship from Almirante La Torre to Fred. Just kidding. I won't really make this change. But the point is, I could. So now, if we go back to David Wiley's course, David Wiley's course is a wiki, and I can edit his course. Now, his course is a bit less open because it requires that I log in. And let's try. This might not work. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. And it won't. Yeah. Well, I have to have an account here to edit, and I don't have an account here. So, but anyhow, you can see what he did. He put up the weekly readings and blogging instructions, grading, and then content for each of the individual weeks. Now, these are links to external resources. And you can also add extra pages to this wiki. But basically what he did is he created a shell, and then he asked people to contribute these resources. And these are all resources that were contributed by people in the course and from around the world. So that's what I wanted to do for us. So here we are, we have the MOOC guide. And I've put it on Google Sites. And I'm setting it up to allow people to help me edit it. In Google Sites, I help people, or I allow people to edit it by managing the site. So here you can see the work that I've been doing on it. As you can see, I was up early this morning. And here's the sharing and permissions page. And these are people who I've added, and they can help edit. And I'd like you to help edit. And if you would like to help edit, what I need you to do is send me an email. And maybe I have some people who've already asked. And no, okay, here I am reading my email in a workshop. Yes, we can get away with that. but send me an email and here's my email address. Oops. Cancel. View. Sorry, I'm just trying to get it all on one line, but my it's not working. There, that's my email address. So send me an email with your email address. And I'll go to this page, and I'll add your email address right here. And then you can help edit this site. Excuse me. So how does that sound so far? I'd like to get a sense from you right now. For how many of you is what I've said so far new? And for how many of you, you've heard this all before and you're getting bored? A few, so okay, we're split right in the middle, aren't we? Okay, that's fine. That's probably a good place to start, actually. So, we'll go back to the Moot guy, we'll go back to the Wily Wiki. So, the things that you can add here on this page are suggestions on what you can write collaboratively. As you can see, I've got some suggestions up here already. Using a site like Google Sites or a wiki, you can put things online like organizational information, communication information, links to common files, and other things. The thing that I would emphasize here is that a service like this, a site like this, is best used. I'm thinking about how I want to say this. Is best used in place of paper communications. Now, what I mean by that is, to be careful not to duplicate your effort. Because this is a very common thing that people do when they're moving online, and you've probably experienced this in your own teaching, where there's a temptation to do the offline version and the online version. And you end up doing everything twice, right? And so what I try to tell people is to do the things you're now doing offline, online. If you need a print version, just print the web page. That's one of the reasons why I used Google Sites. Because Google Sites will print fairly nicely. But I want you to imagine the scenario in your head. And I know this has happened with you. It certainly happened with me. You're having a meeting with your colleagues, right? And you're discussing something. And you have somebody take notes. And they take notes. And then they go and they type them up. And then they put them online. The alternative is to put them online right away. So at the meeting, you have somebody taking notes. But what they're doing is they're editing a wiki page or a Google Sites page or something like that. People attending the meeting can see they can see the notes right there. They can add resources. And when you get up and leave the meeting, the notes have already been taken. So here are a few sites, and there are many more sites for shared authoring. One site I use a great deal is Google Docs. And I'll just show you my Google Docs page. Here it is. Here it comes, I should say. And it's taking... There we go. So, as you can see, I've worked on 3 documents today, another one yesterday, some more a couple days ago, and these are other documents that I use. George Siemens, Dave Cornier, and I are planning our MOOC. The three of us are collaborating online. George is right now he's in South Africa. He lives in Edmonton, about 4,000 kilometers from where I live. Dave Cormier lives in Prince Edward Island. Prince Edward Island. That's a province in Canada. And he's in the other direction. But we're planning our course using this document. And George created it, and now he's sharing it with us. And it's a spreadsheet. It's nothing more than a spreadsheet. But now I can start editing things if I want. Or not. Well, I could. Oh, well, never mind. I wasn't gonna edit it for real anyway, so. I hate spreadsheets. But the idea here is we can all edit the same document, work on it together, and replace our planning process with the common editing of a document. Which works really well when it works. So, come back here. Here's another document. And there are other people out there in the world who are interested in MOOCs. And they're using a Google Docs document to create a book about MOOCs. And you can see there's one other person looking at this document right now. I don't know who, though. They're anonymous. And in the same way, once I have added your email to this page, to this document, you'll be able to edit this page. And some of the things I'd be looking for you to share are some sites and services for shared authoring, like Google Docs, like Wiki Spaces. Here's Wiki Spaces. We'll let that come up here, and I'll come back here. Like Squidoo, which is another authoring site. And here's Wiki Spaces. Start with a click. Well, I guess you don't start with a click. They say start with a click, but you don't. I'm just looking for the create your own wiki. Oh, here we go. Start with a click. And so we just join. I'm doing this live because it's that simple. And I'll remember the password. Yeah, I will. Okay. I'm introducing the concept of the MOOC. I'm responding to the translator here. I'm introducing the concept of the MOOC slowly by first talking about the concept of the shared online course. So, here's my wiki. And I can start editing it. There it is. Just like Wikipedia, edit this page. And I wanted to take the time to do this. You can see it took me about 2 minutes. And I went from not having a wiki to having a wiki. And now I can use this document to start sharing and collaborating. Now, that's what David Wiley did with his course. And today, I think maybe it doesn't seem like much, but as little as 4 years ago, it was very innovative. Now, another influence on us was someone called Alec Koros. And he also offered a course online. And what he did is he offered a webinar. A webinar is a web conference. And he brought his students into this web conference. But he also invited anyone else in the world. Now, this won't work, but I'm going to do it anyways. Here's one way to have a webinar. But you need fairly good bandwidth. So I haven't tried this with local bandwidth. But this is a site called Ustream. I'm going to log in. And now I'm logging in. And we're just waiting for it. What Ustream is a way to share video and audio and have a chat. Okay, so here I am. This is my account. So I've signed in. So I click on the broadcast now link. And I only have one channel. It's called Down's Show. Because I have a very limited imagination. So I've started it. And what am I broadcasting? We'll call it MOOC Show. And so, okay. A little zero tolerance on piracy message. And as you can see, it's loading here. Ustream always takes a little while to get going. But the idea, what Alec Koros did, is he took an environment like this. It was a different environment. It was called Illuminate. I imagine many of you are familiar with Illuminate. And he opened up this Illuminate environment so that people around the world could join in. And this is still moving very slowly. Okay, we're going to allow it to use the microphone. So here I am broadcasting myself. This here is the VU or volume meter. So I'm doing a video broadcast and I'm doing an audio broadcast. So I'll start the broadcast. Now I'm transmitting to the world. And if you are out there in the world right now, anywhere, you could be watching this broadcast. And so here I am doing a talk live from here in Mexico. And George in South Africa could watch this. So, again, it's a way of sharing our content worldwide. Now, of course, I have to tell people that I'm online. Because nobody knows I'm online, right? So, I'll send a Twitter message. So it wants my Twitter. Ooh, it shouldn't ask for that, but okay. I don't know if I remember my Twitter credentials. I never log in. So let's see if it gets that right. I always spend time waiting for things to happen online. And, oh, here we go. Is he going to let me do it? Or do I have the wrong... the wrong address? So... The problem with Ustream is sometimes it's slow. You may be noticing this. Checking in chat. Yeah, so it'll let me connect by Twitter here, and nothing's going to show up down here. I don't know why. Oh, well. Anyhow, the point I want to make to you here is that anybody can do this for free, provided they have a computer with a video camera and a microphone and an internet connection. So this is something you could do in your own class even now. You could open your class to the world. All you do is you have your regular class and you have a computer in the corner. Or perhaps you have people calling in from online because you might be doing a distance class. And you can make it available to everyone in the world. And I still don't know whether it's going to let me do Twitter. Broadcast live 30 people in your crowd. I'm sure that's not true. Down, you've connected your Twitter account with Ustream. Well, that's fine. Oh, I see. Okay. This is the joy of working with the internet. You go back to your old familiar website, and it's changed. So let's see if that works. So we'll go back to Twitter and reload. I'm waiting for Twitter. Here it comes. Wait for it. And here we go. Broadcasting live. So, and notice I've used the Ed Radio tag again. And oh, and this is funny. And he just passed me a note saying we are also transmitting live in Ustream by our webpage. And that's probably why my internet is so slow. So, according to this, we have 4 people watching. But let's go to the other web show. www.cuvalles.com dg.mx. So it's kind of interesting. I've come here doing a workshop demonstrating something you are already doing. Here? Oh, it's a little tiny screen. There we are. Hi. That's pretty funny. I've got to record this. And, oh, okay, there we go. A little secret on the Mac. Control-Shift-4. And now I can highlight an area. And that's wait. Okay. And now I've taken a photograph. Okay. All right, and yeah, that was kind of fun. Okay, how are we doing so far? Is this going okay? Too fast, too slow? Okay, most of you are still in the room, that's good. Like I say, I like to keep it very informal and very relaxed. I have 2 cameras. It's a difficult venue for that. A difficult room. I feel I should be quiet. Okay, so I've done some of the preliminaries. I've given you the background. This is the environment in which we first began to think about developing a MOOC. And as the note, or not the note, but as the translator asked, perhaps I should tell you what a MOOC is. And in our online book, that's chapter 3. In 2008, George Siemens and I launched an online course. And we did not set out to create a MOOC. We were just going to offer an ordinary online course. We thought we would get maybe 25 people. The course was being offered for credit at the University of Manitoba. But we saw the example of David Wiley, and we saw the example of Alec Koros. And we're both, George and I, are both proponents of open education. So we decided to open our course. And so we did, and we opened up the sign up. And 2,200 people signed up for the course. And if you think having a small group discussion in this room is hard, Which it is. This is not really an intimate room. Try having a small group discussion with 2,200 people. There's no way our system can handle it. It's not reasonable to put an entire course with 2,200 people inside Moodle. So we're faced with a dilemma, right? Either we close the course, or we do something different. So we did something different. So, how did we set it up? Before the course started, we built a wiki. And here's the wiki. Oh, I guess I can... I'm sorry, I'm just wondering if I'm still broadcasting on Ustream, but I don't know. I have too many windows open, that's my problem. This is a typical session for me on the computer, right? I have so many windows open, I don't know whether I'm broadcasting live on the internet. It's very funny to watch me at home because I always act as though I'm live on the air. And I'm making comments and very careful about what I open just in case. Because I have so many ways of sharing what I'm doing. I forget if I've turned them off. So anyhow, let's close Flickr, and let's close that, and all right, now here we go. So here's the wiki. Connective is in 2008, and we can't edit this anymore because it's 3 years old. But we put all the course information up. And, you know, week one, week two, so what is connectivism, instructional design, power control, validity. All of these are issues close to my heart. There was a discussion how to translate that. So we opened up the wiki so that participants or potential participants could edit the wiki and design the course for themselves. And it was very interesting, I thought. Nobody did it. We put up a wiki and nobody changed anything. And, you know, it's similar here with this MOOC guide. I put it up. It's been up for a while now. And I have some people signed up. But so far I'm the only one to make changes. And there's a lesson in that. Another discussion. That sounds right. The lesson is that it's hard to get people to contribute to centralized things. So there George and I are at the start of our course, 2,200 people. None of them have helped edit the content. But we forged ahead anyways. We carried on. We continued. Okay, so we created a blog. So here's the blog for the course. George and I both contributed to it. And we used WordPress to set up this blog. WordPress, yeah. Here's the WordPress homepage. It's wordpress.org. Org, yeah. And this is software that you download and install on your own web server. That's what we did. But you can go to wordpress.com and you can create your own blog right here. But we didn't do that. We used our own server. Either is perfectly good. So now we have ways of talking to the participants, but we really wanted to encourage discussion. We did set up, of course, Moodle environment, and we wanted to create discussions on the Moodle environment. But we ran into the same problem again. 2,200 people, one Moodle environment does not work. What happened, and this happens consistently with every large course, is a small group of people dominated the conversation. Maybe 10 or 15 people contributing, and 3 or 4 people with most of the posts. So, what we decided to do is to massively distribute the course. And what we asked people to do is create your own blog in your own space. And we said to them, what we will do is we will collect what you've written and distribute it to everybody else. That way you are in control of your own writing space. And this is something that George and I believed anyways. Because we believe that learning takes place in a network. And one of the properties of a network is that it's distributed. Different locations. And another property of a network is that the individual members of that network are autonomous. They choose their own technology. They choose their own subject to write about. So our role changed very dramatically. And it changed in two ways. One way is pretty obvious, and that was that our role became to be the people who connect the other people. We became the facilitators of the connection. The other way, though, is a bit surprising. Because the Course is so distributed, and because the members are autonomous, we could just act like students. And instead of trying to teach and to lead and to, you know, to be, you know, the big authority, we just write in our own blood. Highly opinionated. We argue with each other. We invited experts to the course. And we argued with them. The experts argued with each other. There was no authority. So our approach was different from constructionism or constructivism. We were not attempting to be guides and facilitating. We were attempting to be participants at an equal level with everybody else in the course. And it may be true that people may have read our stuff more than other people's stuff, but there's no practical reason why that would have to be the case. And this is a lesson we've learned over and over again as we've continued. So looking for my link. So here's the course structure. And for those of you listening on Ed Radio, I'm showing the big systems diagram of the CCK08 course. It's the diagram that's in my slideshow from yesterday. So, here's the Moodle. You can see it in the upper left-hand side there. Here's the Wiki. And there should be a blog here somewhere. Here we go. And here are some decentralized resources. And there are some other things we added to try to join the pieces together. So here's a Facebook group. Here's a Technorati search. Here is a Google group, and so on. And you see that this structure of a course is very different from a traditional structure. But the other thing we had to do is to find some software that would join everything together. And for that, we used something called Grasshopper. This is software that I wrote myself. And I'll show you some Grasshopper. Now, I want to ask first, was there a plan to have a break in this? And it's 7:05, okay. What I'm going to recommend at this point, for those of you who may smoke or who drink too much coffee, is to take 5 or 10 minutes. We'll have a short break, and then we'll come back together. And as the lure to bring you all back, I'll actually go into the Grasshopper software and we'll look at how we use Grasshopper to organize the Connectivist course. Does that sound good? Okay, so we'll see you all in 10 minutes. And for those of you listening on Ed Radio, I'll give you some music for 10 minutes. So I'll start up the audio recording again here. I believe we're recording, are we not? Yes, we are. And we got people coming back into the room. Have we got translation action happening? And we do. So what I'm doing right now, I'm receiving emails from those of you who are in the room. Thank you. A lot of you sent your email address, and that gratifies me. I'm very happy. And so I'm adding all of your email addresses to the list of people who can edit this site. Here you are. Look at all of you. This is great. Yeah, and I think that's all of them. Yeah. So, I'll close my email for now so that. So, those of you who sent me an email, you probably received a message back. And now you can go into that website, and I see the three of you in the front row with your computers there. That's what I like to see. It's this principle of interactivity, and so you can now edit this website. One person in their email asked the question, what are the advantages and disadvantages of opening it up for editing? And I have my ideas on this. The big advantage from my perspective is that you get multiple points of view. The big disadvantage is that you get multiple points of view. It's a two-edged sword, right? when you get multiple points of view, you hear things you might not be expecting. You might also get things you disagree with. You might get things that you think are false. This is one of the tricks to collaborative writing. And really, what makes it so difficult with a large group is being able to come up with one thing that represents a consensus of everybody. If you look at the difficulties Wikipedia has had over the years, and they've had to create and assign special editors and set up discussion areas and arbitrate disputes simply because there are so many points of view. This is a big advantage of a distributed system. We don't all have to agree. And in fact, it's better if we disagree. There are different ways of saying the same things. And we may want to say different things. And this is a strength. And I found this as well, I think, in the connectivism course. And especially in the first course, where we had the Moodle forums, and they became this big battleground. And people are trying to make their point of view the dominant point of view on the Moodle forum. And it results in one of these situations where you have to shut people down or moderate them. Or tolerate wide extremes of points of view or perspective. And that partly explains my style of presenting here today. What I don't want, and which is very difficult in an environment like this, what I don't want is for there to be one authority, one point of view that's the dominant point of view. Which, you know, kind of look at us here now, and we're sort of doing that. But that's why I have Twitter. And so those of you who are online with your computers or with your smartphones or whatever, use the tag EdRadio and you can make a comment. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you don't want. If you have a question, whatever. I'm following it. Because my job here is not just to present something. I will have my point of view, and you will hear it. But especially in a workshop, it's good to have a dialogue. Now, we saw how hard it was to have a dialogue by passing a microphone around to 50 people. But if we distribute it, you can talk to me, you can talk to each other, we can have different conversations going on in different places, and we can make a large group still very interactive. And for those of you who are wondering what a MOOC is, that's a MOOC. That's all a MOOC is. You take something that used to be centralized and you distribute it. By distributing it, you make it massive. So the trick, the secret sauce, as they like to say, of hosting a MOOC is to foster these lines of communication. Okay. So I was going to tell you about Grasshopper. Here's my website. And I use Grasshopper for my website as well as for MOOCs. Here's Grasshopper as it manages my website. And oops. Here's Grasshopper as it ran the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge course. Oops. And here's Grasshopper as it's being used to manage the Change MOOC coming up. Now, what we do when we ask people to sign up for one of our Connectivist courses is we send them to a login screen and we ask them to enter their name and a password and to remember themselves. Sorry. And if you're not a registered user, we ask you to go to the register newsletter subscription page. Those of you who have signed up for this course are familiar with this page. There's a simple little captcha there, so that the people who sign up are humans and not machines. And we ask people to subscribe to the newsletter. So this is the typical first view that somebody has of our Connectivism course. And we can see that the person has successfully registered. And they can manage their newsletter subscriptions or change their information. They can add their name, their city, and other information about themselves. And then time will go by. When the course starts, what we will do is we will ask them to create their own blog or their own website or their own wiki or whatever, and to use that blog or website or wiki or whatever to create an RSS feed. And then to enter it in this screen. Now, how many of you are familiar with RSS? Two? Two and a half? Okay, so now we're going to do something new, right? Okay, So, let's pretend you're a new student and you've been asked to create a blog. And so you've decided to create a blog on Blogger. So let's create your blog on Blogger. You could have used WordPress.com or Tumblr.com or any of a number of other blogging services. Those are the things that I'm asking people to add to the MOOC guide. Right. Blogging software such as WordPress, etc. So suppose we create a new blog. I won't actually create a new blog here because I have too many already. Maybe not that one. Let's go to this one. Oops. We're just waiting for it to come up. And so now here I am in the editing screen of my new blog. And we're waiting for the editing screen to load. And when the editing screen loads, I'm going to create a blog post. So let's pretend I've created the post. And so here's the post that I've just created. It's review the EduPunks guide. Could be anything. And so now my blog has been created and I've created some posts. Blogger or any other blogging software will automatically create an RSS feed. Here it is. All I did is I typed, whoops. Here it is. Try it again. Here we go. So, feed is, here's the address of my RSS feed. And it looks a lot like my blog. Here's the post that I just created. Review the EduPunks guide. The difference is that it's in code called XML. You don't even need to worry about what it looks like. If you're feeling really geeky, you can create RSS code by hand. I once wrote an article, how to write an RSS feed with Notepad, a web server, and a beer. Come up eventually. Here it is. And if you want to read it for yourself, it's on my website, www.downs.ca/post/56. But let's come back to my feed. Now, if you're not sure how to find the feed for your blog, you can always ask. Send me an email, tell me where your what the address of your blog is, I'll tell you what your feed is. But generally, it's just the address of your blog with feeds and then posts. It's a little bit different. So once we have the address of this feed, we copy this address and we go to the page where it says add a new feed. And so we put in the address of the feed where it says RSS file URL. So this is the URL of my feed. I'll put in the title and my name. And it's always a good idea to put in the URL of the web page. This is important because my experience has been many people get their RSS feed URL wrong. It's a little bit tricky. But if you tell me the URL of your blog, I can always find the feed address. And any administrator can find it. And there's a different way for each blogging software, so I won't go through all the different ways, but and you can type a description here as well. And then you hit submit. And you've done all you need to do. So think about what you've done. You've done two things. You've created your own web resource. And you've sent the address for that resource feed. Now imagine our large Connectivist course. What happens now is people start sending in feeds. And on the other side, the course administrator is receiving all of these feeds. So let's go back to the administration screen. And I'll go to the administration screen for an older course. So this is the Connectivism course. And this is a course that we ran earlier this year. And here I'm in the Grasshopper admin screen, and here it says list feed. So I click on this. So now remember, I'm the course administrator. And here's the list of all the feeds that participants in the course have contributed. Dozens and dozens and dozens of them. And they go on and they go on. In our first course, the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge 2008, we had 172 feeds. And in this course here, CCK 11, 180 feeds. Right off the bat, this is much more participation than ever took place in the Moodle forums. Each one of these is an individual blog. So here's one I just clicked on at random, really at random, called A Learning Quest by Matthias. That's just his name, Matthias. And here's his blog. And see this little button here with the sort of the curves? And click on that. And I can see his feed directly. And there it is, right? So, here's the list of these blogs. Now, what I can do in Grasshopper is harvest these feeds. Now, what this means is my software makes a request to the blog and retrieves any new posts. So let's try one. Let's harvest this feed. Just click on harvest. And so it's processing the feed. You can see it retrieves the URL, detects that it's XML, and then parses it. When I say parse it, what I mean is it examines the structure and it takes it apart. And then it stores the blog post in a database. So here's the item title, the URL, and all the rest of the information. And it saves these as links. And so now I can click on list links. These are all contributions contributed by people from their blogs. In one course, 12,349 links. That's a lot of contribution for one course. It was scattered all over the web and then gathered together by this software. So far, so good? Can you imagine how useful this is? Even if I did nothing else, think about how useful this is. It's incredibly useful. Suppose you have an ordinary class of 30 people, an in-person class or an online class. You ask them to create their blog and to use their blog for comments or questions or whatever you want. You harvest their posts and they're all in one location like this. One of the things that I like to do is read the posts in a viewer. To remember where my viewer is. Here we go. So here's my viewer. So I'm reading, here's a post, Communication Society by Keith Harmon. And here's another post from Jap Bosman, some images. And here's another post, and it's in Spanish, I think. Yeah. And if I was reading this in Google Chrome, I just hit the translate button, and I'm reading the Spanish post in English. It's very handy. And in this way, I can support a course with people from many different languages. And I can keep reading. And if I want, I can comment on the post. And here's my comment screen. And I just type my comment and update records. And I've added a comment. So, I've accomplished one major task as a course facilitator. I've gathered all the material together from all over the web. And I have it in a database where I can work with it. But what about the 2,200 people out there? There's two things that could happen. On the one hand, they could have their own personal learning environment and do this themselves. But personal learning environments don't exist yet. So, on the other hand, I, as a course manager, can make this all available to them. And that's what we do in the Connectivist course. Remember when you signed into the course, there was that box that said sign up for a newsletter, and here we can see it here as well in my options screen. CCK daily newsletter. As the manager of the course, let's come back to the administration screen here. I create a page, and actually create lots of pages. Here's all the contents of the course. Here are some pages about privacy and links to recordings. And here is the CCK11 daily newsletter. I'll just go into the editing screen so you can have a look at it. Now what this is a newsletter that I can send people by email. And what it is basically a web page that I create using Grasshopper and then distribute it as an email. So this is the page. Go I'll go back to the administration screen here. Here's my newsletter page. Take a second to come up. And here's my, I can select an action to send newsletters to administration only, or to all subscribers. I use this as a test. I've learned from hard experience. Test the newsletter first. Because the one time you don't test the newsletter is the one time you've made a really big stupid mistake. Like running the same post 5 times. Or some such thing. So, when I want to send the newsletter, I just click Send Newsletters. Now, here's what happens. The newsletter page has some commands to get content from the database and turn it into a newsletter. For example, here's the section on participants' blog posts. This little bit of code here, which I've created and I distribute with Grasshopper when I distribute Grasshopper, tells the system to get all of the contributed posts that have been harvested and then put them together to create the newsletter. And this is what it looks like. Now, there's no recent post because it's old. But I'll go into the newsletter archives and just pick one at random. So here's the CCK 11 daily newsletter. And this is the different content I've harvested using Grasshopper. The audio recording from our live session. Discussion threads in Moodle or Google Groups. Individual comments that were posted. And the blog posts that were harvested. This is fairly late into the course, but you can see that there's still a great deal of activity happening in this course. These are all posts that were written that day. I also harvest Twitter posts. Remember how I talked about using Twitter and using the Ed Radio tag? And of course, everybody knows about Twitter and tags. But we use Twitter tags, in this case the tag CCK11, to tell the harvester which Twitter posts to put in the newsletter. Look at all this Twitter traffic. It's one day's newsletter. What's happening in a connectivist course, in a MOOC, is that all of this activity is taking place all over the place. People are using these common sites to post online content. Things that they already know about. Things that you already know about. But when they use them, and they use the course tag, in this case CCK11, it becomes part of this large conversation. Does that make sense? No? Yes? It's a bit, it's kind of something to get a handle on, isn't it? It's something to sort of think about for a bit. When we've done surveys of students that were in connectivist courses, we find that the number one most important thing in the course to them is the daily newsletter. Think about that. It's something that's not even contained in a learning management system. The daily newsletter keeps them on track. Keeps them connected and keeps them participating in the conversation. So that's the basic structure of a connectivist course. It's the basic structure of a MOOC, a massive open online course. And so we've gone in this session today from a foundation that we're all pretty familiar with. Things like open content and online conferencing. But when we mix that with distributed content, and some method to join that content together, we have a MOOC. Now, I wonder if the audio out will work. And because I want to play a short video, and then that will close our session for today. And it'll give you something to think about. Think about the pedagogies and the principles and behind this basic structure that we'll talk about tomorrow. So, and the video I want to play is this one here by Dave Cormier. There we go. So let's test this sound. Nope. I'm gonna try again. computer audio out into the speakers. Pardon? Yes, it's still and it's plugged in. And for those of you listening on Ed Radio, we're just trying to get this video playing. Pardon? It's already? Okay, let's try it. Come on. No joy yet. Just not loud enough. Try plugging it back in again. Okay, you're gonna give me a different. Okay, good. That sounded good. Excellent. All right, here we go. Hear that? Okay, good.
Open for participant or distributed. It supports by one.